Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Hi, welcome to this evening's call. We're going to be looking tonight at the committee man. This is something like, I think, our 14th or 15th episode, and we haven't really discussed the committee man since. We've been really looking at a lot of legal stuff. Our purpose is really focusing in on getting political and judicial power back into the hands of the people. And that's where we started from, which led us into the judicial side of things, because we had to sue the Board of Election in order to get back the elected committee man, because they have expunged him out of his existence. And so that's where we're at right now. We're in courts, and that's why we started to pick up and learn about the court procedures. We didn't know anything when we started this, and we've been in court now for a couple of years. We've got two cases going against the state, and I think I'm ready to do a third one. Because we do have a matter of fact, we'll talk about that after this reporting. After this introduction to the committee man, about a potential third case we may be able to file in the next week or so, plus a case on the sheriffs, because we have a problem with the sheriffs here in New York State now, or a potential problem, shall I say. So we want to cut them off at the pass. But tonight, like I said, we're going to look at the committee man. And what most people don't realize is that the committee man process in the state of New York is a facade. It's no different than that of the Federal Reserve. It doesn't exist, okay? Our court system is a facade. It's no different than the Federal Reserve. It doesn't really exist, at least not the system that they take us through, which is the Nisi Tree as part of the court. The whole thing is a fraud. We're going to look a little deeper into the judicial side maybe next weekend, next Monday. But tonight we're going to look at the fraud of the committee man process, in which these people look like they're elected, but they're really ruled over by and controlled by party bosses. The people have no consentors, because the committee man is the consentor for the people. We elect each election district elects one individual to be their consentor. And each county has so many committee men in it. County of Dutchess, which is the county I live in, have 249 election districts. Therefore, we have 249 committee men. 249 for the Republican Party, 249 for the Democratic Party, and they defer to all the other ones also, so they don't even have any representation at all. That's why we tell everyone, become a Democrat or a Republican, and let's take back the process. The process operating today is a private organization. They have absolutely no true authority. They have no purpose of really being there. They're controlled by party boards, yet they control our entire political process. All the woes we have, every political woe we have, is the fault of your party, whichever that may be. If it's the Republican Party, it's their fault. If it's the Democratic Party, it's their fault. Because they're working together behind the scenes to defraud you and take away your freedom. Now, they may not realize it, but that's the way it is. Every county is controlled by one county chairman. He is God, politically speaking. And whatever he says is going to go. And he gets his marching orders from up top from the state chairman. Each county chairman is a state committeeman, and there are 62 counties, 62 chairmen, the county chairman. They get together and they're supposed to elect or choose a state chairman. They don't really get to do that. They're told who that's going to be, and that person then rules over them. And wherever they get their orders from up north, ultimately we know it all comes down from the New World Order. So every elected office in the state of New York and in every state of the union is pretty much under control. Every once in a while, a Ron Paul is able to get in or somebody, but generally speaking, they have a pretty good hold on it. And they really don't care whether the Democrat gets elected or the Republican, totally irrelevant to them, because they own both. So it's either this criminal on the right side or this criminal on the left side. So whichever criminal you want, that's the one they're going to give you. So, of course, they prefer certain criminals over others, so they do fix the voting machines. There's no doubt in my mind. Look at these last two elections. It's an impossibility, in my opinion. But anyway, I'm talking about presidential. Anyway, let's look at the fact that these people have no powers. And I'm going to show you and prove it to you by the Supreme Court ruling. New York State Supreme Court. These are all the words of New York State. I'm going to read them exactly how they wrote them, exactly how they ruled. This is in the case of Francisco versus Borden, where they decided the creation of a town party committee, its powers, its authorities, and its procedures are solely the providence of a county committee. So it comes directly, everything comes from the county committee. The authority comes from the county committee, the power, the creation of it, everything from the county committee. So in another case, Bell versus Kerwin, we read the executive committee, the committee man. Now, if anybody doesn't know what the executive committee is, that's the county chairman and usually three or four other individuals working together in conspiring in their county. So you usually have a chairman, you usually have a co-chairman, and then you have a secretary, and you have a treasurer. So it's usually four people who are the executive committee. They control the entire county. But ultimately, it is that chairman that has word over everybody. Sometimes they will allow, and they play a game with this, because they have the county committee, and then they have they have another name, something county committee, and then they have the executive county committee. The executive county committee is really just one person, okay? Sometimes it's four, but it's one person that leads that four anyway. And then they have, sometimes they'll have a county chair committee where they'll allow one, the town chairman to have a seat on it to make them think that they have something to say. But they really don't. And they even hide the higher executive committee decisions from the lower committee decision anyway. They only find out when they have to, when they butt heads against them. And then they either behave or they're cast out. But anyway, the executive committee chairman, this is Bell versus Kerwin, the executive committee men have no vested constitutional or statutory right to office. Let me repeat that. The executive committee men have no vested constitutional or statutory right to office. We are being ruled over a group of people that's a private association that has no connection at all in any way to the elected process that we have here. It just appears to be that way. It's a facade. They went on to say the executive committee, in common with all standing committees, was created by and exists pursuant to the rules of the party. So they get their power from the rules of a private association. In another case, I got two more cases to look at. One is the Carmilla versus Corney, okay? And they say town political committees can be formed only upon the authorization of the county committee. That's a private association. Last one, Bauman versus Fusco. It is not disputed. This is the New York State Supreme Court. It is not disputed that the executive committee exists by virtue of the rules of the county committee and is not a creation of the election law. So there it is. Our entire political process is controlled by a private corporation, which is controlled by some other sort. And, you know, hey, our political process is controlled by I don't know. I'll get back to you in a minute. Maybe about 8 o'clock, I guess. I'm sorry, 8 o'clock. Let me go back here a bit. Our money system is a fraud. It's controlled by a facade. The Federal Reserve, which isn't federal and has no reserves, it's a private corporation. It's a foreign corporation. And that's what controls our money system. We have a political system that's just like it. It's a facade. It's a private organization. It doesn't answer to anyone. And it controls our entire political process. It decides who's going to get into office and who isn't. And again, they make you look like you have a choice. It's just either criminal A or criminal B. And the judicial process is the very same way. We have a group of people that created a private organization that was incorporated in 1909, and it's called the American Bar Association. And in 1909, they rewrote the New York State laws, and they added almost doubled the entire size of the law. If it was 500 pages before, it's 1,000 pages then. Okay, so they just about doubled it. And they wrote in all kinds of legislators. They got some criminals to work with them in the legislature, and they passed this legislature which controls your behavior. You now became subject to them. They control your behavior through these laws. And so that took place in 1909. That's when they went through the process, and it came into effect into law in 1911. But they really didn't start pressing those statutes as law until maybe the 30s. It took a little time to kind of move things into play. And so they moved these things into play by sometime in the 1930s. But now they control the schools through the Bar Association. They control the curriculum. Everything that they're taught, all the judges we have on the trial level that are taught by the Bar Association, the same thing with the lawyers. And they have been taught that that statutes are laws. They actually believe that. And that's what they do. They shouldn't call them lawyers. They should call them statuettes or something, because they definitely don't practice law. They practice statutes. In any event, it's a facade. And they created a judicial system that acts on a nisi prius process, and yet the Constitution, the New York State Constitution, is absolutely crystal clear that the Supreme Court is a court of record. That's what it is. You either have the jury that is going to rule, and if there is no jury, the sovereign of the court rules. And that's the way it is, and that's the way it's supposed to go. But they have robbed that process. They've created a facade, and they've taken control of it. So we've lost our judicial process, we've lost our monetary process, we've lost our political process, and they even control, to a major degree, whether you realize or not, our religions. So we lost even the process to talk to God. They've trained us to go find a priest, find a party, or a lawyer. And we actually do that. We actually do that. You know, I talk to people all the time, learn this judicial process. But they think it's too difficult because they've been brainwashed that it is too difficult. They're not bright enough, I guess. And they fear it. They run away from it. They run away from God. They run away from the political process, and they run away from the judicial process. I'm saying let's run to those places. Let's run to God. Let's run to the political process. Let's run to the judicial process. Let's take it over. Let's do the right thing, because that's the only way. That's the power of this whole country. Those are the three things that control this entire country. And if we don't take control of that process, no matter what you do, you can talk to your green in the face, you can make all the phone calls you want, you all the writing you want, but you're not gonna get any power, and you're not gonna get anything accomplished. You may slow things down, you may twist a few arms, you may win a few little battles, but you're gonna lose the war. Without the power, you're gonna get the bazookas. You're gonna lose the war. Okay. So the purpose of the statutory committeeman, just a couple of minutes and then we'll open it up, is to build a facade no different than that of the Federal Reserve, to seize control of our government, to create political parties to divide we the people, to provide for lobbying in order to disenfranchise we the people, to empower corrupt politicians, to promote political correctness to facilitate communism, to destroy our republic, to destroy our Constitution, to look legal but it isn't, to look like it has authority but it doesn't, to look like the participants are elected but they are not, to look like the people are ruling but they aren't, to facilitate the New World Order. And all the facades do the same thing. The money for the Federal Reserve, they're facilitating the New World Order. The political process, they're facilitating the New World Order. And the judicial process through the Bar Association, they're facilitating the New World Order. And everybody complains about these voting machines, but if people really looked in to see who made the decision on this, they'd be surprised to find out it is their party. Their party has the ability to make a change, okay? I see your hand up, Gerard. Give me one more second. I just want to really quick go. Well, let me give you a second, and then I'll get back in. Let me see if I can. Go ahead, Gerard. You want the mic?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to make a point when you started out reading about the town committee being created from the county committee and all that. What you didn't mention, and people might not understand, is, we discovered 6-118. Now, 6-118 is the constitutional standard that the committeeman stands on, and he's still in the law. 60-118 says that the committeeman is elected at a primary. He's one. He's really the only one other than a delegate that is elected at a primary. So he's in there, and they had to put him in there, because if they didn't put him in there, it would be unconstitutional. Of course, they've expunged his petition. He's no longer running petition, so therefore he's no longer there. But he is in the law. And that 6-18, it's basically what everything else hinges on, because the judges are assuming that somebody's elected, even though nobody is. The lawyers are assuming somebody's elected. Nobody knows. These guys, nobody has any idea, because they gradually expunged it. And so you have three different sections. You got party rules, and you got the law, and you have what the parties do on their day-to-day. You have the Board of Elections and their mission statement. Well, the three of them, very few people have the big picture like we got. It took us a couple of years of banging around to discover this. But you have to remember that 6-118 is where the committeeman lays, and that otherwise – we wouldn't even be making this fight, because it would be useless. So, see, he's in the law, and that's basically what we sued them for, to recognize the law that they put and covered on the back burner and covered it up. And basically, that's all I wanted to put out there, because a lot of people don't understand when they say that the town committee is created solely by the county committee. Well, these town people are running positions, petitions, and they think they're elected at a primary. Well, right there it tells you it's created solely by the executive committee, or the county committee, rather. So that tells you you're not elected. How could you be elected and created by a county committee? Doesn't make sense. The president is created by the people voting for him. Same thing with a congressman, and same thing for a committeeman. So anybody that's created is appointed. All right, I'll shut up now.
All right, thank you for that. I'm going to leave your mic unmuted, so you might want to mute your mic on your end so nothing comes out.
Yeah, I always mute my Skype.
Okay. All right, but I'll keep you unmuted if you want to pipe in. Okay, anyway, a couple of things I just wanted to cover. Well, let me just build on that a little bit. Not only is it an election law subsection, in election law Article 6, subsection 106, it's 6-118, that's what it is. Not only is it there in election law, which, again, is statutes, and remember, statutes are written for bureaucrats. It's saying to the bureaucrat, set up the process for electing a committeeman, and they have not obeyed that. As a matter of fact, that's the lawsuit that we forgot, Gerard. That's the lawsuit that we have to go after. We have to go after these we have to sue these people individually, the commissioners, because they have violated a very specific U.S. code, which talks about getting in the way of a campaign for office is a federal offense and could be up to 10 years in jail. So in that case, it might be 1 or 2 years. So I may be wrong on that 10-year one on that one. So it's a 1 year in jail or 2 years in jail. So I think we need to pursue that one. But in any event, it is also in our New York State Constitution. As a matter of fact, it's in the Bill of Rights, the very first article, the very first section, the very first paragraph after the introduction to the to the New York State Constitution, the prelude, we have right there, the committeeman shall not be, shall not be
disenfranchised.
Disenfranchised, thank you very much. Okay, so we have that right there in the Constitution. So they violated the Constitution. They violated our unalienable right under the Constitution, you know, that is expressed in the Constitution for them to be obedient to. They violated also New York Code, okay, which is a statute telling them that they need to prepare and not to prepare for it, for the election of a committeeman. Meanwhile, they've changed our paperwork and done everything they can to ignore the office of the committeeman, and the power of the committeeman remains in the hands of a private association that is under the influence of the New World Order, because the whole process is to put us into a behavior mode. People need to step up and take control of this stuff. We're laying all this stuff out, and people need to get more involved. They need to jump in. They need to become the committeeman. They need to take control. They need to get control of their own judicial life. They need to get into the courts. They need to sign up as plaintiffs in all our major cases. They need to support us with money, too. You know, we really do need some money. So anybody who can send us, even if it's $5 or $20, send it to us. You know, if you give us a couple of hundred, that'd be really great. We really do need money. And we're going to go file a couple other complaints coming up. Each one of them is really focusing in on bringing back our republic. They have to be done. Okay, so I just want to end this thing with how they did this. How did this happen? Okay, in 1911, boy, that's a familiar date, 1911, okay, the last election law that was printed that represented the control of the government alone without the behavior of the people was 1909. So between 1909 and 1911, they were busy writing new law. And some of that law was, of course, election law. They rewrote that. But in 1911, exactly as President Washington warned, he said, cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men, enabled by the perversion of election law, would, through the legislation of election law Article 2, of course he didn't say all that, but he mentioned the point that they were cunning, ambitious, and they would take over the process by taking over the committeeman process, creating town committeemen. But anyway, through the legislation of election law Article 2, subverted the power of the people and usurped to themselves the reins of government. And that's what he warned would happen. And they did destroy the very engine which had lifted them up to unjust dominions. These people dominate both political parties and are known as progressives. Progressive legislation, in collusion with other collaborators at the Board of Election and both parties, secretly orchestrated the creation of these political private associations known to us today as the Republican and Democratic parties. This was a direct assault upon our republic and set the stage for the perversion of the office designed to be the closest to the will of the people, the committeeman. You could also call the committeeman the consentor, as we read about in our Constitution. The consensus of the people.
Can I do a rest of the story here now? Just real quick.
Let me just finish this, and then you can pick up the rest. I'm almost done.
Okay.
Another couple
okay.
of lines.
Okay.
And place the entire direction and control of our country into the hands of a few people whose intent on destroying our constitutional republic. And in order to pull off their scheme, they needed to only... To covertly do three things empowered by Article 2 over a period of time. And again, that period of time was between 1911 and sometime in the 30s. We know that the first court case came up in New York State around 1948. Before that, they didn't have any problems with these party bickerings and things. So this all started then. Let me just bring up the 3 points and I'll pass the mic to you. This is how they did it. First, they changed the titles from the elected committeeman to the nominated member of the county committee at the primary elections. And since the controlling powers prepared all the designated petitions for their victims, this was a simple exploit. Two, they oscillated the power by changing half the New York counties to the odd year's election. This way, the committeeman was already met by an existing top-down power structure, not unlike the Communist Party. Three, they created the necessary party rules over time to control everyone. The execution of these three things simply accomplished the expulsion of the elected committeeman, and today there is not one cognizant elected committeeman to be found in New York State, and it is also legally but unconstitutionally placed the total control of our election system into the hands of these criminals while they wait for the election of the committeeman that will never come because they erased him from the memory of the people until now. And today we have approximately 150 elected committeemen in the state of New York. Of those 150 elected committeemen, about 49 of them have taken their oath, so there's actually 49 of them in office today as we speak, and although we need to renew our oaths because it's a new year. And we're going to get ready to do that kind of process soon, but we'll talk about that maybe in our conversation. That's pretty much it for me, Gerard. You wanted to add to this?
Yeah, I have an interesting case in point that kind of needs to be stuck in there. And, boy, I just thought of something else when you were talking. My mind is not what it should be. Oh, those words that you just read are in our lawsuit about the committee men. I believe we included them in the lawsuit, right?
Yes, we did. Read. Yes.
Okay, so they have that. Now, interesting enough, what I just realized today is today was the day that they read Washington's farewell address in the House, I guess. They do it every year around this time because it's President's Day. Well, Washington's farewell address, fully 50, maybe 60% of it, after just 8 years in office, he complained about this party system, about the, how they were going to take over the committee man, and that you shouldn't have parties, and that they were going to use the parties that, to lift themselves up and take the reins of government. And he said that the parties wouldn't listen, the politicians, that your elected officials, I should call them politicians, but they are, but your elected officials would now only listen to the party and not the people. And who's the party kowtowing to? The corporations. So that's why the people have lost control of their government. That's why we have fascism, because the corporations make law. Listen, if GE doesn't want to pay tax, they don't hire an accountant anymore. They hire a lobbyist to make the law to exempt them. That's that, because they have the party in their pocket. They make sure that they get candidates up there that will make laws that, that help them, and that's why we're having a problem. But here they read that address today. They read this stuff, and they don't even know what it says. It tells in our case, Washington makes our case for it. If you read Washington's farewell address, he talks about everything we're talking about, and they did it. And here they are reading it today on the floor of the House.
He used his words in our writing.
That's right. And they don't even know what the hell he's talking about. But I thought it was real. I didn't know that they read that farewell address. See, I didn't become real familiar with his inaugural address and his farewell address until we embarked on this lawsuit and we were doing our research. Part of the research was history lesson. We wanted to know what Washington thought. We wanted to know what Jefferson thought. So we studied them and we read their writings, their words, and all this baloney that, well, they didn't know, and you know, Second Amendment really was for like the National Guard, not for the people. That's all bull. They said so many things that you can't possibly even say that that's what they thought, because the follow-up sentence and their follow-up articles and everything else that they did after that absolutely affirms the way it is, the way it was, and the way it is. And so that's all new stink. 1984, newspeak, now loaded into people's brains, lying, rewriting history is all that's about. And, you know, I forget who it was that said, give me control of the money and I control the nation. It was one of them, probably Rothschilds or something. But do you know what Hitler said? Hitler said, give me control of the schools and I'll control the nation. So guess what? We got both of them accomplished now, don't we? All right,
now they're working on our guns.
That's right. Okay,
Let me just tie this up with the purpose and the power of the elected committeeman. And, you know, the purpose and the power of the elected committeeman is the power to guard liberty, the power to prevent unconstitutional legislation, the power to quash politics, preventing any legislation that controls people's behavior. And this is the most important thing. Understand this concept. If there's any concept that you need to understand politically, this is it. If we stop the legislation of the behavior of the American people, which is exactly what they're doing, it's unconstitutional, and they can't apply anything to you as long as you know that. You can challenge jurisdiction. They got to throw it out of court. They got to leave you alone. And they got to pay you for wasting your time even, because you could sue them on any of these things. Okay, and if they continue to pursue, you can get some big dollars out of it, because it'll be vindictive prosecution, it'll be conspiracy, it'll be all kinds of things. And this is what we're doing in the courts, and this is why people have got to get involved. They've got to learn. It's not rocket scientist. It's science. It's very simple. Okay, so if you get rid of all of this crazy legislation that is legislating the behavior of people, you have just gotten rid of politics. You have removed politics from the political process, because the right is trying to get their legislation through and the left is trying to get their legislation through, and each one is abusing the other's freedom by trying to write law of their behavior so that their way will have it. And of course, all of this is being taken place through all of the corporations and, you know, all this funny money that they put out there. So if you go back to the basics, what Washington was talking about, you just go back to the basics and you remove all of this crazy legislation. You now remove all of the politics. You don't have politics in the political process no more. We at the committeemen group here, New York committeemen, we have nothing to do with politics. We don't get into the argument of politics. We're just into the political process, and we want to get statesmen into office. We want to get people who understand the Constitution into office, people who will obey the people through the committeemen. And remember this, the total control of the process is by the parties. The parties control everything. And when we take control of the parties, the political process, we get the name Republican back and we get the name Democrat back, because we're doing both, Democrats and Republicans. Once we take those names back, they can no longer use it. They got to find some other name to use for their purposes. But they're not going to get any more legislation, because we're going to control it and we're going to say no more. It's done. And anybody that doesn't obey and doesn't vote the right way, well, we're just not going to support them the next time. And if it's something like the governor, you know, well, we'll just recall him. Anyone that's too powerful, you know, will recall. We don't care if 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 senators goes against our will, or the same thing with the assembly, because as long as the majority of them go along with the will of the people, then the right thing's going to get done in the end. But when it comes time for reelection, we're not going to carry their papers. We're not going to help them to get back into office. We will blackball them. We will put their information about them up on our website to let the people know why they don't want to vote for these people if they were to find a way to get into the process, because there are other ways, but it's very difficult. So anyway, the committeemen can quash politics by preventing any legislation that controls people's behavior. They choose the candidates that are the statesmen. Bar members need not apply, okay? If you belong to the American Bar Association, don't apply to run for office while we're in power, because you can't have an allegiance to a private association, especially such a political and judicial process that is destructive to the American way, and then try to come and run for office. We don't want lawyers. Lawyers need to go home. They need to go back. Matter of fact, we need to get rid of the Bar Association in the state of New York. We have the power to recall all the disobedient politicians. We have the power to prevent lawyers from writing our legislation. That's a big one. We elect these people to go to Albany and even to Washington to write law that's necessary law to control municipalities, law to control the bureaucrat, the elected individuals, the commissioners, the agencies, government agencies. That's what the law is supposed to be doing.
That's what statutes are.
Right. So we need to put that back to where it belongs. That's what they need to be writing, okay? That's what they need to be doing. But what they have done, we're paying these people all this money to go sit in a room to write law, and they don't even write it. They just come and vote in. They don't even read it. Someone else is writing it. Lawyers are writing this stuff. And who are the lawyers working for? What is the purpose of the American Bar Association? It is to facilitate the very same thing as the parties, to facilitate communism, to facilitate the New World Order, to prepare the people, to make the people behave little by little, taking more and more freedoms, eroding more and more, until they have total control over you by the law, and then the iron fist comes down, and that's it. They come out for your guns, and we're third world, and we're done. Okay? Well, we're very close to the time period. We need to stop it. We need to stop it now. There's no more time. It's time to get up. It's time to get more people involved. It's time for everybody in this room to not only be back every Monday, but to bring more people with them, to hand out our flyers, to support us in every way you can. And we need the financial support also. So support us every way you can. Get onto every case that we write up when we go against, for instance, we're going to bring the sheriffs back to more power. We're going to get rid of the gun laws in New York State. Sign up. Become a plaintiff in these cases. The committeeman also presides over the election. They get to count the votes. They witness the hand counting of the votes, and then they report on it. They watch our elected and appointed officials and bureaucrats like a hawk. That's the job of the committee man. And every person, it is their duty to become a committee man at least one time in their lifetime. It's a 2-year period of time, and it's only one day a month. That's it. If that, one day a month for 2 years, big deal. We can all, in an evening, okay, we can all do that. It is true that the people that take the higher positions and it doesn't give them any more authority, their vote is no different than your vote. It's just that they're going to be more busy, like the county chairman or the secretary or the treasurer or the co-chairman. They're going to put a lot more hours in. So anybody who wants that kind of position to be nominated to that kind of position, you better be ready to put the hours in. And you better be ready to travel Albany and have the ability to travel Albany when it's necessary, probably at least 6 times to 12 times a year, 6 times minimum, 12 times probably now immediately, because we're in a state of emergency. We have so much work to do to make this process go back to where it belongs. So, but everybody has a duty to do this. Everybody has a duty to learn the judicial process and to stop these snakes, these criminals from destroying our country. We have a duty to do that. We have a duty that we have to go and we have to learn these things. So hopefully everybody is going to, you know, look at an hour a day, 5 hours a week, 5 days a week. You could do one hour a night, an hour in the morning. You could do 5 hours on a Saturday afternoon, whatever you want, but 5 hours a week, 1 hour a day, okay? That's all you need to do is put an hour a day into studying, okay? Over the course of a year, it's something I did the calculation. What is it? 52 weeks. We do 52 times 5. Okay, that's 260 hours. I assure you, 260 hours is more than enough. More than enough. You'll be a brilliant. You'll be brilliant over these stupid lawyers. Because believe me when I tell you, they're stupid. They're worse than us. We're pretty dumb, but they're dumber. Okay, because at least we, you know, we're learning the truth, and they're still working on lies. So, you know, 260 hours and you will be a brilliant, I don't know what to call you, a lawyer? I think a lawyer might be the proper term because it's about the real law of the land. So that's what we need to do. I know I went way, way overboard here, but let me end this and let me unmute everybody and open it up to conversations, questions, comments, 2 cents, 3 cents. Hey, Max, if you're not talking, do mic, you know, mute your mic so that we don't get any background noise.
A couple comments. Okay, I just want to mention some basics because that's what I'm here for. I'm going to fill in things that I didn't hear John say. And the one of the basics that he didn't mention and one of the reasons that we're suing, going after the two-party system, is because fully 95% of everybody that gets elected in this country is either in a Democrat or Republican parties. That's a fact. That's why we targeted those two parties, because the other parties, love them as you might, and good people that's there and all that, they just don't have the political clout to do what we need to do. So we went after the power base. It makes sense, you know what I mean? You don't attack the weak area, you go to the strong area. So, you know, 95% of the people are either Democratic or Republican. So we have to take them over. That's the only way to do it. So now, many of the people that vote, they don't know the issues. They don't care. They've been so dumbed down and so programmed, and they're so easy. They just go in and vote the party line. They go in and pull Democrat or Republican all across the board. They do it. There is a very large group of people that do that. I think that group has gotten smaller in the past 10 years, that people are crossing party lines now like they never did before, and that's a sign of the awakening. You know, the matrix is starting to come apart. But basically, that's a fact. And people get upset with us sometimes because, you know, we don't mention the other parties. We don't mention the other parties because they don't have. It's not pertinent in this battle. They're a minor force for us. And we don't, you know,
I'm
I don't
more compelled,
know.
I'm more compelled by the notion that really the vote doesn't even count because of election fraud from those electronic voting machines, basically, that are the counts can be set whatever they
you're
want.
You're absolutely right. And those voting machines, guess who decides that? You know, Bob Schultz was suing the state. It's not the state. It's the party that decides how the votes are counted. That's what it is in law. That's what it was traditionally. That's what it still is.
If you look at what Jim Condit has dug up on that, the bottom line is that there are five corporations that
who's
are manufacturing these machines, and all five of these corporations are basically beholden to the media. The media is at the heart of this.
I understand, but the party,
First name, hello, first name, what is talking. Whenever anybody talks, give the first name so we can recognize voices and so on.
All right, who was I just talking to?
Liam.
Liam. Okay,
I don't know why I didn't get your voice yet.
Liam, I understand that they're beholden to the media, but ultimately, the guy that has the key and the chain is the party. If the party said we didn't want those machines, guess what? They wouldn't be there. The party has the ultimate. Listen, who closed the primary down in Maine? It was the Republican chairman. Said, oh, they're still coming. That's who closes it down. That's who decides how the votes are counted. Whatever goes on after that, whatever corporation's got it, that's all politics played out. After they open the door up, put the key in the lock and open the door and let them run through it. Now you got the media. Now you got these corporations. That's what I'm talking about. You know, the corporations are running the party. And so you're right. Because of the vote fraud, it actually negates a lot of these votes. But if we take the parties back, number one, we can change the way the votes counted. But even more importantly, if we put up Thomas Jefferson and Ben Franklin or James Madison as the two candidates, do you give a crap who gets in? Either one of them gets in, we're going to have better government, aren't we? So that's up to the party to put people like that in.
The same thing is true whether you put up Hitler or anybody. It doesn't matter because you got the party controls the political process and the political animals. They don't do anything outside the will of the party.
The way you got to explain that, the way that you would control somebody like a Hitler is if he wants his political career to go on, he has to do what the party tells him what to do. So as long as the
otherwise,
party remains,
he doesn't get back in.
Right, because the party's the one that carries his petitions. And like we said, everybody pulls Democrat and Republican levers regardless sometimes of the issues. They don't even know them. They just vote party line. So for a elected official, the party is everything. I mean, that's why we even have problems with these judges. We wanted a jury. We don't want judges ruling on this thing because I don't care if he even has a 14-year term. Believe me, the party has a freaking collar and a chain on those judges, and they do. And that's why we can't let judges decide things.
When we take political power, we are going to pull all the powers together to speak to them one at a time. But we're going to pull all the judges. Every county has an elected judge, one elected judge. Okay, then there are acting judges. Well, these acting judges will have to come too. So we're going to call a meeting, and we're going to read them the Riot Act because they're going to bring our courts back to the common law system. They're going to stop all this fraud going on in the courtrooms. You know, when you go into a court, you're walking into an Easy Prius court and you're controlled by statutes and not by law. We've got to change that around. That's what happens in town courts. We can appreciate it in town courts. And they will tell you that they act upon statutes. Okay? But the Supreme Court, they say, oh, we're here. Oh, yeah, we got common law. We got case law in here. They're full of baloney. Okay? So we need to give them the Riot Act. And then we need to start yanking judges, doing the biggest recall in the since the beginning of this nation, which was the first recall in this nation was the Declaration of Independence. Okay? The same thing with the sheriffs. We need to pull all the sheriffs. We've got 62 sheriffs. Actually, we've got 57, I forget, sheriffs, because there are seven counties that do not have a sheriff. Well, they have sheriffs, but they don't have anyone elected. They don't, they're not elected in seven counties. But they do have one, two, three appointed sheriffs in those counties. But many
of
them even pull the sheriffs together. Yeah, and we're going to do a court case in the next week or two. We're going to start asking people for some more money to help us. We want to do a thing on the sheriff and protect that office. But we've also got to stop the state police from getting control of the permits, which is another subject we need to discuss. Another problem coming up, and we need to deal with it now. We need to stop it now. So we need to do at least two more court cases. But the sheriffs, we need to pull the sheriffs together. We need to get rid of the mentality look it. I grew up in the Bronx. I knew a lot of cops. I hung out in a couple of bars that were cop bars. I know cops. I know what they're like. I know their attitude. You know, everything. You know, I know how they deal with things. Most cops have the same kind of mental makeup or something. But it's a club, okay? They got to get rid of that club attitude. If you're a sheriff, get rid of the club attitude. It's up to you to make sure those deputies don't have that club attitude. They need to come out and talk to us in respect and not treat us like we're a suspect. Because every time I talk to a cop and he ruffles his feathers, the next thing you know, I'm a suspect. You know, he's questioning me and quizzing me. And I don't need that. I need respect. Yes, sir. No, sir. Please, sir. Okay, that's how I want them to talk to me, with respect. And we're going to teach these sheriffs that's what they need to do. They're our elected officials. They're here for the job. They are the people's police force. They are not the police force of the government. They're not supposed to be out there. Thank God they're really not too often out there handing out tickets and doing things, because that's not their job. We don't want them doing that. We don't want them going. We want them to get real criminals, someone who injures another individual. That's what we want. If there is no injured party, don't even come and put your face into my face. Just say, yes, sir, thank you very much, and go on your way to me. Because that's how you need to treat me. And you know what? I'll treat him the same way. Okay? It's common respect back and forth, but that's a problem. We need to deal with the sheriffs and talk to them, make sure they understand and get their deputies straightened out. We need to pull the assembly together. There's 150 assemblymen and there's 62 New York senators. We'll pull them all together in the same time. And we lay out the program to them. No more unconstitutional bullshit. That's it. Don't even think about any kind of legislation that's not for you to be doing because it's unconstitutional. Don't even think about it. And don't even think about sending any more money to Washington unless it's constitutional money. And if you don't know what constitutional money is, don't go ask a lawyer. Go read the Constitution. Figure it out. Or come ask us. We'll let you know if it's constitutional or not. You know? And we need to meet with the governor and give him the riot act too. We need to pull all of our congressmen. I think we're down to 27 congressmen, U.S. congressmen. We need to pull the 27 congressmen and the other two commies that are senators. They won't listen to us. They're going to do whatever they want to do in the Senate, and we're going to have to recall them. There's no doubt in my mind about those two because they're just not going to hear anything we have to say. But we need to pull all those people together, and we need to read them the riot act, you know. You go to Washington, and you go take some of that little funny money in the back rooms. We're going to have a sheriff waiting for you as you cross the border into New York because you're going directly to jail. Do not pass go. This is how we got to get. We got to get hardcore with these people. We got to get together in a committee, discuss the ideas, the plans, and then go and give them the riot act, and we got to make it happen. And when we bring New York back to the Republic, I'm going to tell you, every state around New York and all the way to California is just going to, like wildfire, it's going to go across this country, state after state after state after state. There's no doubt in my mind. So it all can happen right here in New York, but it's up to the people to stand up. They've got to get up. They've got to become committee men. They've got to go out. They've got to start learning the law. Let me tell you another thing I discovered, and I challenge anyone to deny this or challenge me on this. You cannot know and understand liberty unless you know common law. It's an impossibility. You think you know freedom to do this, well, I want to be free to do. You don't know what liberty is. You don't know the meaning of liberty, and you don't know the expression of liberty without knowing common law. That's what liberty is common law. And it's not memorizing any kind of statutes legalese. That's not what common law is. Common law is natural law, and it makes sense. It's righteousness. And that's what we have to stand on, and that's what we have to understand. You have to understand one of the main principles of liberty is this, and this is maturity. This is maturity. The government does not have the authority to legislate your behavior in any way, shape, or form. If you want to stick a needle in your arm and take your life,
John, where do you,
that's your business.
John, where do you suppose that you're going to learn about common law? Because I do agree with the statement, but you got to go one step further and direct people.
We have it on our website. We have it. That's what our website is all about. It's all about the political process and the judicial process, all under natural and common. Natural law and common law are synonymous. So we call it either or, but it's all about common law. Founding fathers' statements. We have biographies, autobiographies. I mean, we have everything.
Okay, I was actually reaching for something specific, and so I'll just lay it out. I think that Sir William Blackstone's commentaries on the common law of England is the authority on common law, and as I've read those volumes, I've realized that the founding fathers were reading those books as they framed the Constitution, because it's all there.
We have all those books. We have all the philosophers.
And they're on our, they are on our site.
All the 17th century philosophers, we have their books right up. We have our founding fathers' autobiographies. We have biographies on our founding fathers. We have all of the constitutions. We have the Declaration, obviously, of Independence and the Bill of Rights.
We've got
Blackstone commentary up there. We have even the dictionary. We have Black's dictionary. We have there's a couple of dictionaries we have up there. We have 50 or more hours of common law audio on the court of record and the process, a whole new state of mind. We have video. We wrote our own course on court procedure. That's still an add-on, but, you know, we're still adding to that. But all that's available. We have written out cases that express. A matter of fact, if you read our case going up against the governor, the Senate, and the Assembly for our Second Amendment case, if you read that case, that's an expression of common law. That'll give you an example of what common law is. That'll tell you what freedom is. That'll express the essence of liberty just by reading that case. It's so powerful because it's their words. It's our founding fathers' words. It's the words of men with integrity in the Supreme Court that have made these statements that we look at as case law, okay? And it's powerful. And if you go read even our case again, our second case, and even our first case was we didn't understand common law then, but we knew something about it. But our second case particularly is the Board of Elections.
We knew it like Bagnarik knows it. In other words, if you take Michael Bagnarik's course, you understand that it's good to be king. But what Michael Bagnarik doesn't have, he doesn't have the procedure now. In other words, he understands the idea of freedom.
And he didn't have the court of record.
He did. Well, that's the procedure in my book. I mean, you know, the court of record is how you get there and how you exercise it. In other words, he explains what freedom is, and he explains how, you know, where the Constitution is and where it is in the Constitution and how this country was founded and how we're all sovereign, which they're trying to turn into a dirty word, by the way. If you use that word sovereign, you're a terrorist. But you know what? We got to start using that word more and jamming it down their throats, because if I'm a sovereign terrorist like Jefferson was or Patrick Henry, well, then guess what? I'm a terrorist. I'm in good company. If you want to call me a terrorist like Patrick Henry was a terrorist, then good. That's what I am. You know what? You better be terrorized.
I can tell you that anything that we say here, and when I say we, I'm talking about those of us who have been working behind the scenes in New York Committeemen, anything we say here, anything we express in any way, shape, or form, you will find it up on the website. That we learned it from our founding fathers, from documents, and we have it all up there. It's all up on our website. You could probably spend a year up there and still won't get through everything. So, but get selective. Go into our common law area. That's the most richest place to go, in my opinion, right into the common law area.
And you get those You get those judges that say you're not talking about the Constitution in my courtroom. That's not what we're here for, especially in an IRS case. They don't want to hear that. And the reason that they don't want to hear it is because the person came in as a slave, as a citizen, so they don't have to hear it. But, you know, those judges are saying that they don't want to hear it. I dare say they don't even know it. They don't even know what it is. They've probably never read it, never heard it. You know, they don't even know what it is they're banning anymore. That's how bad it is.
Does anybody else have any questions or comments? Anybody else want to pipe in here?
Let me just throw my two cents in.
How you doing?
Good.
That's Ken.
Yes, it is. There are an awful lot of people.
I thought I'd introduce you for you since you didn't introduce yourself.
Yeah. Okay, Ken's speaking.
I'll take
it
out. My quip for the difference between freedom and liberty is freedom is the absence of restraint, and liberty is the absence of control.
And that I've actually defined it myself deduced it myself from Blackstone's commentaries that freedom is the right to do what freedom is the doing of whatever it is that you so please, irregardless of its consequences on others. Liberty is constrained freedom. It's the freedom that follows the golden rule, whereby you can do whatever you please as long as it does not infringe upon the liberties of others. I think
right.
That
right.
is
Liberty
at
requires
the essence of the difference.
Amen.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. My book covers what I call the liberty doctrines, and the liberty doctrines has you have every right to do whatever you can think about, except you cannot violate the rights of someone. If you do it against somebody else's consent, then it's not you don't have that kind of liberty.
Right. Your kingdom stops where mine begins.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I mean, and people have so forgotten that. It's such a simple idea, and yet it's been driven out of our minds. I mean, look, we have laws on the books that if your insurance policy runs out and they catch you driving, it's a felony. Now, there's no injured party. You didn't kill anybody.
Right.
It's a felony. You know what a felony means? A felony means you can't own a gun, you can't vote, you can't do this. For driving without insurance, now, who do you think pushed that law in there? You think the people did? No, it was obviously the insurance company manipulating the legislators to protect their ass to make people buy more insurance and make sure they don't run out and pay their bills on time. You know, this horse shit that we ought to be covered by all this insurance that they're making so much money on that they're using to break the bank over here with us.
And
you
it's
know,
what
all
ruined
that,
it's what ruined the medical profession and everything.
That's right. And so this is one of the things that we have to clean up, and it's one of the things that will actually go away if what happens, what we're talking about happens. A lot of this stuff will fall away. When they realize what liberty is, these companies won't even begin to try to pull any of that horseshit.
Right.
You know, they'll just know that it won't fly. It's flying now because we have so many – we have three generations of dumbed-down people,
yeah.
Maybe even more at this
more
point.
More than that, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I did an awful lot of thinking about the idea of voting, what you can do to get better control of the voting, not control, but better handle on the integrity of the voting. And I've come to the conclusion that you have to give a receipt, and that receipt, you have to then have a website that monitor anybody who wants to give up that receipt, and it's used numbers instead of your name. You get a number, which is a unique number for that receipt, and that receipt can be run against the total.
Well, we've come up with some ideas about voting. First of all, we're ignorant, I don't even know what half the offices do. I mean, we know what congressmen do and so on, but there's a lot of commissioners out there that are appointed. There's other elected positions in the county, in the town, and we don't know who these people are. We don't know nothing about them. Sometimes we don't know what their office is. We don't know who's running and when they're running. We don't know anything. We're just so stupid. It's pathetic. We actually vote for people off of a sign that we see in the street that some party hack put up, and you see the sign enough, and you go and vote for that person because you're in the party or whatever. I mean, this is where we're at. This is the mentality of Americans. This is what we've stooped to. This is how bad it has gotten, and we have permitted that. But we have the opportunity to change that. You know, one of the things we want to do is once we take power and give it back to the people, we're going to take NewYorkCommittee.org, which will always be a nonpartisan website, and it'll be something to work together to fuse back together the Democratic Republican Party, the original Jefferson Party, and use that as a place where people can get educated. You know, if you want to know who's running for what, you should be able to go up onto that website and you click on, candidates, and everything comes up. You put in your election district, and everybody that you're going to be able to elect in that particular election, in your election district, those positions will come up. you click on the office and see what it is that that office is responsible for. You click on the individual that's running, and you'll have a 500-word essay written by the candidate right there to read.
Yep.
And at the end of that 500-word essay, you'll have his website. And if you kind of want to hear more, you click on that and you go to his website. You see, we have to inform the people. No more. Well, we take control. I'm not putting up a sign.
If you want to sit down and talk to him, you make an appointment to go see him.
That's right. You know what? When we as committee men have a responsibility, when we go and interview these guys, we should also call for special meetings in our towns for these people to come in, or in our counties for these people to come in, and call all the people interested. Let them come in and question them. Okay? And make sure they answer. Don't let them dance. And if they dance, we throw them out and say, hey, get out of here. You know, don't dance. Tell the people what's going on. Okay?
Listen,
and so
the other thing is,
I just want to finish this one point on signs. Any sign that we stick up, any sign, shouldn't have anybody's name on it. It shouldn't even have a party's name on it. We put signs in the corners or something when election time comes. It's the reminder of people to vote. It's a website where you can go and get educated and decide on who you want to vote for, and you can go learn this. We should require the news media to give a certain amount of time, because that's their job. That's why they have that special extra right,
exactly.
The right of the press. They need to be doing this during election time, and they need to be getting the meat of the process out, not the bullshit party crap that we're just tired of. And that'll change this whole – I mean, one other thing. When people go into a voting, their place where they vote, when they go polling place, okay, I've asked them many times, how come we don't have information about the candidates? Oh, they can't be doing any politics here. What are you, crazy? What do you mean you can't be doing any politics here? We're not looking for politics. We're looking for someone, a statesman, to tell us who they are and what they stand for. And every one of these individuals, their 500-word essay should be on that table that you can look at with all the charts and say, oh, let me see. I haven't read this yet on this guy. Who's this guy? Let's see what his 500 words, what he has to say. Let's see if he's convincing me that he's the guy I want. Okay? But remember, we've got to get rid of the politics. No more politics. And if they're just constitutional, there is no politics. Because behavior cannot be legislated.
I had a rude awakening when I had the business, because we wrote software for all the towns and cities and counties in New York State. And this one tax collector was fit to be tied. She thought she was going to lose the election. And she says, oh, I can't go out and get a job. I'm too old. I need this job. That was a real eye-opener for me.
Yeah. She needs a lifetime job, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's the other thing. They make way too much money. It's time to reduce their salaries. And their pension. What is this? They get elected once and they get a pension?
Pensions what should get rid of.
Absolutely. This is not a career. This is a duty. And people that run for office should go in for one term, two terms most, and get out of there. Okay? Make room for the next guy. They don't need to be up there for 50 years. It's ridiculous. We don't need them.
Retirement at full pay is absurd.
So the committee man controls all that. We just don't walk their papers after the second election. That's it. They're done. We'll retire them for them. There's no pension here. And their salaries are way too much. Look, these people shouldn't be making any more than a professional, most professionals might make in the neighborhood, depending on what it is that they do. You know, an architect or an engineer or something, you know. They shouldn't be making anything more than that. These people make obscene salaries. Obscene salaries.
Yeah. They're obscene is right.
Now, I don't know if you've ever tried to go on different political candidates' websites, if they have them. But if you'll notice, most of the time, on most of them, they don't even tell you what party they're in. That's how bad they've gotten. You see, they don't like to take stands. You know why? Because they know that the minute they take a stand, now they got a 50%. In other words, let's say it's an evenly divided issue. They lost 50% of their potential votes by taking a stand. So politicians get real good at not taking stands. And they've gotten so bad that they even hide their party in the hopes that somebody from a different party will pull their lever because they like their picture and they like the little candy cane stuff that they're saying. And most of what they say is candy cane stuff. They don't want to get into issues, you know. And the other thing is,
when we get rid of the politics, they won't have to be. They won't be able to talk about that candy stuff.
I think if you're a committee man, you have constituents like I have like 300 constituents in my district that I got 5% of the signatures, and there by virtue of that, I am their representative as a committee man. Now, I don't see these people every day, although they're in my neighborhood, and I do know them. I have a local business, so I'm in a position where I see more of them than the average person. But what I would do as a committee man is I would send a questionnaire out to those 300 people. Comes time to start picking candidates, I would send a questionnaire out. What's the biggest issue? What would you like to see? You know what I mean? And they would send them back to me, so then when it came my turn to Wade, a candidate, I would at least know what my constituents are thinking. You know what I mean? You don't have that today.
I got a great idea. I think this is a real good one, okay? We as committee men, we got together in 2012, all the elected committee men in the state of New York, about 48 of us or so, Democrats and Republicans, got together in Kingston, New York. We rewrote the party rules, and we also did a resolution, okay, which we're going to deliver and put in place as soon as we're able to take power because they refuse to give it to us. And that's why we're going to court. But you know what? I think we should spend time and rewrite papers for the salaries of all these people in the state of New York. We should go see what they're making, and we should write a bill and change everything, okay? Get rid of everything, all their fringes and stuff, and then we should go up there and submit it to them and give them an hour to vote on it without reading it. That's what we should do. And anybody who doesn't vote on it without reading it within an hour, okay, we're going to recall.
You got one.
And then
problem.
They can go and complain to the governor, well, they didn't let me read it.
You got one problem. Well, actually, it's not a problem. I let me throw something out there. You know, you're saying we're gonna get together and do a resolution and force them to vote on this. There's people going to say, well, you're acting like you're an elected official because now you're introducing
bills.
Well,
we are.
And well, that was the point that just got me. We are.
But not only that, they've been doing – they have never written their own damn bill to begin with. They get the bills from the lawyers. The lawyers write them. And they're even pre-written by some other group of lawyers that work for the order.
Just be prepared. If you're going to send up a written resolution and force them to vote on it, it's going to come out, well, who the hell do you think you are?
Oh, no, the resolution, we're going to give it to them. That's just going to sit there and they'll ferment in them. They're either going to obey it or they're going to get their walking papers. But that's not the point. No, we need to write a bill to change all the salaries of all government officials, people who are hired by the government, getting a certain salary. We need to reduce everything. It's got to come back to reality.
They're going to scream about that. They're going to say, who do you think you are? Knowing, you know, the thing about government is they think
they think that they can write or decide on their own salary.
No, they think that you don't know. They have an opinion that the average person is stupid, and we need them to tell us how to spend our money.
Just like we need all the teachers in all the school districts, right?
Yeah, they definitely have that attitude that
they don't know the answer to first base.
The knowledge or the wherewithal to be telling them what to do. That's the problem.
Well, that's okay, because, look, first of all, we're getting rid of every lawyer, which will probably get rid of 90% of them anyway. Okay.
Yeah, well, they're going to sue you over that. They're going to say that's discrimination.
Well,
that's okay.
How are they going to win against the party and the consensus, the elected consensus? I'm not worried about it. And how are they going to use their stupid, silly little statutes to beat our Constitution? So we're not going to worry about that. Bottom line, this is all possible. I believe this in my heart and my soul. This is all possible. It depends on the will of the committee, the people that take this process up. It depends on how bold they want to be, if they want to bring this country back. You know, there are so many plans that we got, and we just have to bring them into the committee and discuss them and go forward and execute them. Like, first of all, our Constitution says that only gold and silver should be legal tender. What the hell is wrong with us? Why don't we just obey the Constitution? So in New York State, only gold and silver is going to be legal tender. So any money that moves into New York State as it moves through the banking system has to turn to gold and silver and work it out through the system. And we need to get out there with gold. We got lots and lots of silver coins, okay?
Listen.
New York will gravitate to silver coins of the country.
Now, if you want the reality of the situation, John,
yeah.
If you start talking about bringing us back to gold and silver, you don't want to be putting that out there until you have the mass of people, because that's your death warrant. That was Gaddafi's death warrant. That was the other guy there from, what's his name, the guy they just knocked out because he was bringing the
dinar back. Yeah, let me see if I can rewind the tape here.
Yeah. Listen, that's the thing they're most sensitive about. And so, yeah. Listen, we've been subdued with the news media. We haven't let a lot of what we're doing out because we figure that there's no sense that they see us coming. Because if they do and they finally understand what we're really doing, then it's going to be harder for us to get what we want. You know what I mean? And, you know, if they really understood what we're talking about, those judges that could give it to us would be getting death threats in their mail. They'd go to bed at night and their horse's head would be in their bed. So, we've been kind of sort of quiet about that, and they're kind of that whole system. You know, they got some big system that they put on top of us, but it's a dumbed down system. Like I said, the three sections in the election law, one doesn't know what the other one does. None of them do. None of them have the big picture. So they all have a piece of it. It's like the blind men that touch the elephant and they tell you what an elephant looks like. You know what I mean? One grabs mm-hmm. the trunk, the other one grabs the leg. Well, this is what you got going on in the party system. Because the judges only understand their part of it, the lawyers understand their part of it, and the people in the Board of Elections understand their part of it. But nobody sat back and got the whole big picture. Believe me, the guys that subverted this had the big picture, and the guys that are on top that understand how this new world order is marching in, they know the big picture. But you see, we don't want to let them know we're coming because you know, I mean, we need an amassing of people to say enough is enough. I believe that what we're talking about is powerful enough that we can force them to do it if we have enough people who understand what we're talking about. If it's that Helen Keller.
Right. We have to have a full vote of people. We have to have this all 16,300 election districts filled in each party. And then
right.
we can push on the hard
right.
push. So I agree.
And
we can
right.
get into it. But the emergency when we get into power is the sheriff. That's one of the first things we need to do is deal with the sheriff. And,
well,
and
the
make
way,
sure
the
we
way,
secure this.
I think one of the ways to bring the people along is in baby steps is, number one, if we get 1,000 people signed up to this gun lawsuit, let's say, right? And then we insist that they make provisions so that all 1,000 of them can see the proceedings. That's going to be the people making their employees work. It hasn't happened in over 100 years.
You're
so
saying
we're going to be there.
You're saying go to the legislature and observe the vote.
No. What I'm saying is when we have our court case, they don't have room in court for 1,000 plaintiffs. We're going to have 1,000 plaintiffs on that suit. And we're going to say, you got to put cameras in, you got to televise this to a room so that every plaintiff can hear what's going on because they're all plaintiffs, right? They can't keep them out of court. They're not going to like it, but what's going to happen is that's what's going to hit the news media. They're going to say, this group has 1,000 people, and they're forcing them to put cameras, and they're going to say all kinds of crap about us to try to get people to not like us, but in the course of them talking bad about us, the people are going to go, yeah, I'm going down there too. They're going to get excited. We're going to push the court. We're going to push the judges. You know, when we had a court case, and because we're not lawyers, they don't let us speak for people, and it was very hard because they keep, you know, I tried to whisper something in a guy's ear, and the other lawyer went, objection, objection, he's practicing law, and blah, blah, blah. And the judge was like, you know, he went through this big, long explanation why he can't have people that are not lawyers and blah, blah. And I said, well, Your Honor, I'm his representative. I'm helping him with his paperwork. So either you let me say what I want to say, or before we leave here, there'll be another piece of paper on your desk. And he looks at the foot and a half high piece of file of paper he has, and he sighs, and he says, oh, all right. He lets me talk, right? So that's what we need to do. We need to overwhelm them, so to speak. And
right.
What I was going to say is when this particular person was in court by himself and he was studying and he sat there and rattled off what he had to rattle off and he told the judge, I object and you're out of order. He told the judge, he said, you're breaking the Constitution. All the cops, everybody quiet, everybody in the court, they're not used to this. They're used to everybody backing up to the judge And here's this guy standing here. He's got the whole courtroom quiet, you know, and the judge doesn't – they're waiting for the judge to have him arrested. The cops don't even want to go next to him because he's already personally sued all of them, and they're afraid to touch him. He had control. And you know what happened after that? They never, ever scheduled a public hearing. They opened up the courtroom on days off to deal with this guy because he took so much credibility away from the cops and the judge that they couldn't stand it. They didn't want that public display of a true sovereign American citizen resting in common law, beating up their evil judges and the cops. And so we gained a lot of clout that day, believe me. So,
yep. And we know their games now. We know all their games. I think we know most of them anyway. Maybe we better not be too bold to say we know them all, but we know most of them. And when we went up to Albany, yep.
You know what
when
turned
we
them
up
around?
To Albany, and we had a lot of people with us, okay, and there was people in the back, and these were plaintiffs. Some of them, they were plaintiffs in this court case, okay? And they said, Your Honor, we can't hear. Can you turn the microphones on, okay? And he said, no. And we continued on, and these people in the back of the courtroom who were plaintiffs in this case could not hear the case. That's not going to happen again. You know, you live and you learn, and you figure out, what do I do next time? How are we going to prevent this from happening next time? We're not going to do that no more. As a matter of fact, we're going to make it straight on through. Hey, everyone here is a plaintiff. Every person here has the right to hear what's going on, and you need to turn those mics on. You need to get a bigger room for us if you can't fit us all in. And I'm telling people that are plaintiffs on this case, when they come up and they get cut out of the courtroom because it's too crowded, you let them know, not so. I'm a plaintiff. I'm a plaintiff. I get in there, okay? But in any event, you know, we're not going to let them get away with that no more.
See,
everything's going to stop till they turn the mics on.
Those little things that they do is how they gauge what you know.
Yeah,
you see, that was them sticking their toe in the water, pushing us to see how we would react.
He also, remember, he came up, kept saying that, oh, well, the statutes don't allow me to do this. You know, there's no statute to do that.
We didn't
pick up enough yet. We were green. Not anymore. You see, every time you make a mistake, you get stronger. You figure out what went wrong, what can I do next time?
That's all right, Your Honor. Statutes are not law. Let's move on.
That's right.
You say, what?
Right.
Oh, you want to talk about how statutes aren't law? Read our case. It's in the Supreme Court ruling in there.
You see, also, we're going through a case that we didn't make too big a thing yet on the court of record, although we did at some point, but we should have done it up front. This case, we're calling for a conference immediately, and we're going to make a big thing. We're going to make sure, we're going to ask the judge, you know, one of the reasons for to call for a conference in the beginning, we'll put it on paper, is that we want to discuss the law of the case. And we want to quiz the magistrate to make sure he understands his place in the court. Do you realize? Have you read the law of the case, Your Honor? You know, well, I've no time. Well, I'll tell you why. Why don't we just take a break here? We'll give you a half hour, go in your back room and read it, because this court case cannot go any further until you understand what your place in the court is.
John, I just realized something. We also need to draw up paperwork for the bailiffs and the cops that are there, and they need to understand who we are. And how they cannot act on an illegal command from the judge, and if they do, that we will go after them personally. Because
how to handle that part, though. We got to think about that one.
Well, you know, they
got to be on board. This is Georgie. They got to be on board,
listen.
They don't. Not only do they got to be on board, they have to realize that there's consequences to their actions. And you can give them a paper upfront.
This could be done in a different way, though, is what I'm saying.
No,
you can't walk into a courtroom and start handing out papers or giving a speech. I agree with what you're saying, and I'm trying to think on how we would do this, but we need to get a hold of these
guys. I watched a guy on YouTube do it. He discussed the law of the case, and then he when the judge got out of hand, he called the bailiffs up, and I don't know what he had. He said, I have this written up for the bailiffs, and he gave it to the bailiffs to read. You know what I mean? And it must have been short enough, and maybe it was just some Supreme Court quoting or something. But whatever it was.
What guy was this on YouTube?
But what I'm trying to say is this. Look, the bailiffs, every one of these groups belong to their own little group, okay? It's kind of the union or whatever it is that they have. You know, lawyers, the Bar Association is their union, okay? And by the way, I was so surprised to find out that lawyers take a constitutional oath. Can you believe that? I mean, they're so unconstitutional, it's pathetic, and they take an oath. They all need to go in jail for perjury. But in any event, you know, the bailiffs belong to some kind of a union or a group or association. We need to get a hold of that group or that association, and we need to address the bailiffs and get them all, okay?
They don't all belong to an association. That's not true.
They're usually sheriffs.
I'm just saying, some kind of a group. Look at them.
No. They're sheriffs. Like he said, they're mostly sheriffs is what they are.
They're deputies.
Right, but the point is that the sheriffs have an association. I will bet you dollars to donuts they have an association of some type or some kind of a group that collects them together.
If in your county, like in my county, if the sheriff is charged with guarding the courthouse and being the bailiff, quote unquote, then you need to educate the sheriff. That's an easy way to do it. There, you just figured your own problem out. You go visit the sheriff. You say, listen, when we go to court and we're coming in as a court of record, this is the rules. Your deputies need to know this because if they act wrongly, we're gonna have them on the carpet. We're going to have a suit against them, and we want to be friends with the deputies.
Are the sheriff is not the bailiff, is it?
Sheriffs in my county have the whole control over the court. They're the bailiffs. That's what. Maybe not everywhere. But
I was unaware of it. Okay.
And they all have uniforms that say sheriff's deputy on them.
Yes.
Then we go down to the sheriff's office down in Albany County. Whenever we go to practice the law of the land in a county, one of the first things we need to do is we need to go down and address with paperwork and a writing to the sheriff to let him know what's going to be expected of them in the court of law.
It's also an invitation to the conference.
Right.
I'm sorry. Oh,
it's also an invitation to the conference.
You mean the court conference?
Tell you what, when I had my court conference, the sheriff was in there. He came right in the back room with us. He's gonna keep order in the back room. He was in there in the private conversation. They had a sheriff there. I mean, it's a matter of intimidation, I think, you know what I mean? But it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you what, once you educate the sheriff, and you give him the law and you tell him, you know, that there's consequences and we'll go after your deputies personally, any place that has bailiffs and a bailiff's association, they're going to come around anyway, because once the sheriffs know it, guess what? They're all going to know it too. So they're going to say, this is what the sheriffs are doing, and this is the information they got. We better catch up with this because we're going to be getting sued.
You know
the word's going to get out. And they're going to go up to the sheriff. They're going to say, let me see that piece of paper you got from this group, because they're going to want to know what it is. Because one of the most upsetting things was when they get an order and demand, when a sheriff's deputy or any other elected official gets a personal order and demand in his mailbox, the first thing that happens is the wives get real upset. What are you doing at work? We're going to lose the house.
But you can't get it. You can't go out that fork. I say, yeah, what you're saying is true, but we can't go out that fork because we've got to do
it. We've done
it
already. We did it in our county. They all misbehaved. They exercised an illegal warrant. Everybody that touched the warrant got an order in demand, and they got it delivered personally at their house because they were acting outside of their authority under color of law, and therefore they broke U.S. code, and we set the order in demand that they need to answer. Otherwise, they're in dishonor, and we sent it to their homes, and it created a big problem in the sheriff's department because I'm sure the next time that they had a family court order to exercise, probably most of the deputies said, wait a minute now, is this signed? Is this legal? They didn't want to do it. So all of a sudden, he had a problem. Is this a legal warrant? They started asking questions. And he had trouble running his office now because the deputies weren't so sure that what the judges were handing down is necessarily legal or lawful. I shouldn't say legal. I should say lawful. And that's just in this county with our actions. They didn't know what to do with us. And, of course, you know what they did? They called up the FBI and Homeland Security, and they complained, and they said these guys are using words like sovereign, and they're killing us with their paperwork. They're paper terrorists who want you to do something, and I'm sure that the FBI and the Homeland Security looked at our paperwork, and what they saw was a bunch of quotes from the Supreme Court, and they said, what the hell you want us to do with this?
That's it, man. We got to shake them up. get them thinking, you know.
Yeah.
Look,
and I don't doubt that we're on a list, but you know what? I mean,
hey.
when you're this active, you have to remain noisy, because otherwise they will come in the night and take you away.
Yeah, well.
And let me digress for a minute. First of all, Chris, is Chris on the line here tonight? I guess Chris isn't on tonight. I know he's going to go through. He's been checking out our papers, and he's got the latest, and he's going to make the necessary, corrections. And there was a couple of quotes there that we need to concern ourselves with. They may not be, you know, true quotes. So he's checking out the citations for us. But anyway, a couple other things I just want to cover, and then we can get back to the conversation. We have a rally this Thursday coming up in Albany. We're going to be up there. New York Committeeman is going to have a table up there, and we'll be taking signatures for anybody who wants to become a plaintiff in the case. So anybody that can come over to the table and offer their help to us, we'd appreciate it. They're expecting thousands of people. The first rally they had up there during the middle of the week, I understand. Well, maybe I'm wrong on that, but I thought it was during the middle of the week.
It was a Tuesday.
I heard they had. Was that true that they had 5,000 people up there, or 2,500 or something?
It was between 2,500 and 3,000.
Okay, so this time around, there's a good possibility we might have about 5,000 people. We want to get flyers in the hands of every one of those people, and we want those people to be directed over to our table to actually sign up right there and then to become a plaintiff. So anybody that can help out that's going up to that rally this Thursday, come over our table and help out. We'd appreciate. Another thing is I just finished putting a presentation together. I've been invited down to Staten Island. I'm waiting to get another phone call and place a date. People want to know more about the committee, man. And so what we did is I put together a new presentation which combines the judicial process and the political process. And I think I got it down to about an hour presentation, maybe an hour and 5-10 minutes. I did it over the computer and timed myself, and it's about that. As long as I don't get carried away, we'll stick in that kind of a period of time. But my point is this. We're going to be traveling the state again, so anybody that has a group, no matter where you are in the state, if you do organize some people together, get some liberty groups, and invite us down, we don't charge anything, and we'll give a presentation to get people involved in what we're doing. Of course, we take donations, so we'll put a can up there and hopefully cover our gas at least. Also, anybody who could send us money now, we need money, so we'd appreciate that. Another thing, again, anybody here that hasn't become a plaintiff yet, go out to newyorkcommittymen.org and click on the gun lawsuit on the left side. That link is going to change soon. It's just going to say lawsuit or something like that, or actions at law. And when you go to that page, you'll have the different actions that will be running, because we're going to be doing more lawsuits, and we've got a lot of work to do here in New York State. Another thing I've been invited on to two radio stations this week. I want to be on. I don't know, Gerard, if you know the call letters or anything, if they could be gotten online. But John Wallace's radio station tomorrow at 10 a.m. He'll be interviewing me on the committee, man. And then his internet radio station, he's going to have me on Wednesday at 4 p.m. That you can listen to live. You can go right onto our website, newyorkcommittymen.org, and click on today's issues. And right on the top, you'll see John Wallace's little radio box there, and you can listen in live or you can listen into the recorded interview. That interview is going to be about an hour long. The one for tomorrow at 10 a.m., I believe he said, is a 20-minute segment. So, but I don't know the radio call letters. If anybody knows them, they can throw them out on the web, on the page. So there's the plaintiffs, the presentation, the rallies, and the radio, two radio things, interviews. Anyway, with that, I wanted to make sure I got that in tonight. Go right now, back to the whatever.
Do you feel like you're going into a beehive, or that you're going into a understanding audience in those interviews?
They're friends. They're friends. John Wallace is an oathkeeper. He's raving about our our lawsuit. He believes that this is the answer. He read our papers recently.
John Wallace, the light bulb went off in his head recently. I mean, he was always sort of with us. He was always with the Oath Keeper. He really had an understanding of what we're talking. It takes takes a little bit of rolling around in your mind. I mean, it took us a while, too, to understand what we were talking about as far as, you know, the straw man and all that stuff. But the whole common law thing developed out of that, and it's not something that you can get a grasp on instantaneously. You have
who was the one that had, what do you call it, YouTube videos, educational, on the common
Thornton,
law?
Thornton, Bill Thornton?
Oh, yeah, well, Bill, but he's probably talking about, what's his name, Bodnarik, Michael Bodnarik, who does the Constitution. We got it on our website, a complete constitutional course, probably about 12 hours of it.
It's an 8-hour course, Bodnarik. It's about 8.
Yeah, but we have the extended where he goes into on our Bill of Rights, he goes through all of the amendments.
So then you got, and then you, what you have is like what he really gives, because when he gives the course in person, it's the longer one. It's
yeah, I've got that too. Yeah, that's about 7 or 8 hours. Yeah.
That's on the website.
That's on the website.
NewYorkCommittee.org.
Yeah.
Click on today's issues. I think
okay.
You'll find it on today's issues. I'll take a look real quick to see where it's at, but I think it's on today's issues. Let's see.
And then we also have under Common Law tab, we have all of Bill Thornton's audios. I think every one he ever put out.
Yeah.
And
huh.
even some of his radio interviews.
Did you guys sign up for Graves' course?
Who?
No.
The guy from Florida, Graves.
He's good. He's good for procedure only. I wouldn't get too lost in too much that he has to teach you because he's still
going. The reason I ask is I'm putting together a care package for the Mid-Hudson Valley, and he has a paper or a folder of maxims of common law, and I was going to send you a copy.
Oh, that's cool.
I've got them, and we've got them up on our website, and we've got a lot more than that on our website. If you go up to our judicial process link on the left side, and then you click on court access, we have stuff there. On the common law, we have stuff there. And I think on the Constitution there, I think that's the Bodnarik class. Yeah, if you click on the Constitution on that page, that's where Bodnarik's course is. We've got probably, goodness, at least 12 or more hours of constitutional course there. We also have a history lesson up there. I mean, this guy's really good, the guy to give this history lesson. And the guy's name is Thomas Woods. And he gives the principles of Thomas Jefferson and the principles of 98. It's a lecture by Thomas Woods. He's a constitutional professor, and he's really, really good.
Is Thomas Woods the guy that's on the 10th Amendment group?
No,
okay.
He might be connected with them somehow, but he's not affiliated directly with them. I mean, we're all kind of connected to to that group too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he does a lecture on state rights and the tradition that nobody knows. He does a lecture on the 14th Amendment. He does one on the Great Depression and World War II, American prosperity. This guy's really good. You won't fall asleep listening to him. It's like Bodnarik. You go listen to Bodnarik. Yeah? Thomas Woods. Click on history on our judicial process page.
Okay.
Click on history at the top of the tab. And up here, you know, you'll also find in here, you know, we have the law libraries up here, and we have e-books. We got so much stuff. And in here, I'm not sure exactly where it's at, but you will find these maxims. I believe in our law course, if you click on court access, and you can download our law course there, which is court procedure, how to get into the courts, how to write the papers, what papers are required. You know, we kind of do an anatomy of a court case and lay out the procedures, and we've got a lot of examples. And I think in there you'll find maxims, you know, lots of maxims, information on maxims. I know we've got a lot of maxims there.
Listen, I just had a Helen Keller moment here myself.
Okay.
You know, how we're always saying that people don't have an attention span and everything is a tweet, or, you know, you got to do a 15-second spot, and that's how people think today? Well, guess what? Our forefathers had that, and they did that too. And you know how they did it? They did it just like what you just said. Maxims of common law. If you printed them out and hand them out and people read them, guess what? You know what those maxims are going to do? They're going to remember 5 or 6 or 7 of them. And every time you repeat them in your head, you know what it does? It brings you closer to liberty and to freedom, because when you say that stuff, you start understanding. You go, wow, because a maxim is a powerful thing. And it's a tweet. You can put them all over the place.
The problem is, people haven't heard this. They start reading these things, and it become an oh shit kind of a thing.
Well, they're going to say what a great idea. First of all, you could quote that stuff, and you could say it's yours. They wouldn't know the difference. They wouldn't know that it's Madison and Jefferson, and you know what I'm saying?
Because
even if you tell them it's Madison and Jefferson, they look at you like you're some kind of a guru. When you start quoting the forefathers and you do it in a situation that exactly calls for it, and you do it in the proper context, people think that you're just unbelievable. Well, guess what? Why reinvent the wheel? You stand on their shoulders. They've said all this. We know what they said. We know the situations. So guess what? We can tweet too. Let's start tweeting around the maxims. Throw them out there. Put them in the bottom of your emails. We should print the paper up with a whole bunch of them that people can read. And they'll pick the ones out that resonate with them most. And it's going to be different for everybody. You know what I'm saying? But once it gets in your brain, it's like an infection. It's gonna multiply, and they're gonna want to know more.
Put one of them on your signature, so that when every time you send an email, it goes out.
That's a great idea, and I mean that's our tweet. You know, put the maxims out there, put the forefathers' words out there, a sentence. You know, I mean, it doesn't have to be all maxims, but the maxims what made me think. That's a perfect little thing, a maxim. That's how you educate the country. They'll go, I don't know why, but I just know that this should be like this because they read the maxim. They won't even know where they're getting the information from, because it's going to go in their brain. It's going to crystallize, and then the situation is going to come up, and they're going to go, oh, no, no. They're going to repeat that maxim, and they're not going to even know where they got it from, because it's going to go in that powerful.
These came from Graves, their jurisdictionary, and there's an 8.5, they're 8.5 by 11. After each one of them, is an 8.5 by 11 explanation for each one. So that's good.
Yeah, I think that's really great. And so that came with
it. Did you buy his course?
Yes.
It was $249, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Because that comes with his course. Look at. Dave's a nice guy. Seems like a nice guy. He's a pretty good teacher, but he's still a lawyer. And he doesn't understand common law. He thinks he does, but he doesn't. He's just like all the other lawyers. He puts law in front of – he puts statutes in front of law of the land. He teaches you, you know, don't use certain words or don't – you know, why quote the Constitution when you can quote the statutes and case law instead? No, that's not the way to do it. But,
I'm sorry,
you know,
who are you talking about?
For, though,
I'm sorry, which lawyer are you talking
teacher,
about?
The guy that, there's a teacher, a guy named Graves. He's the guy that taught us how to gain access into the court.
Oh, okay.
But you see, that's what his stuff was good for. His stuff was good for how to get access into the court, how the procedures of the paperwork, what's the layout, what's the framework of the paperwork, what's the makeup of the paperwork. You know, first thing you come and you write a paper and you write your introductory paragraph. What should be in that?
The second
thing is jurisdiction, you know, make the point of that this court has jurisdiction. Yeah.
The first screw-ups we had were because we didn't know that stuff. In other words, we didn't know procedure, and that's what they got us on. And that was fortunate because they gauged who we were by that first paper we put in, which made them seriously underestimate us because we kept learning. We were in the beginning of the learning curve. So they labeled us a bunch of dummies because there was some obvious procedure we screwed up. So it's like a first impression. You know, you go into a party and you got your bottom button buttoned and you're dirty and you're this and
your,
that.
Your flies are open.
Right. Everybody forms an opinion. And meanwhile, what we are is we're Columbo going, I think I got another idea. I'm driving them crazy, you know?
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
Yeah, Columbo.
Graves.
Hey, look, I'm going to. Do we have any finalized things before we shut the tape off? I mean, we'll continue our conversation, but I don't want to say these tapes go too long.
Okay,
so any final words before I shut it down? Go right ahead.
Shut it down.
John and Gerard, I have a question. This is Hisham from Staten Island. Did you cover the issue?
Is that Hisham?
Yes, Hisham from
Staten Island. Is that Hisham? How you doing, Hisham?
Yeah.
Go right ahead.
How are you guys? Did you cover the issue of the third lawsuit that you might need to file?
You're coming in kind of bad. Say that again.
He said, did you cover about the third lawsuit that you might need to file? That was in the beginning. You covered that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, the third lawsuit I'm thinking of filing, and we're going to talk about this. Matter of fact, next week we're going to do a focus in on the facade of the court because we've learned so much, and we see the game that they're playing. We have to reveal it and lay it out. And maybe in that time we'll get in more detail. But the idea is this. We didn't have the knowledge. We have the knowledge now. Look, we've learned now you don't go after agencies. You don't go after any kind of a government agency or an association. You go after the individual because, you see, there's nothing wrong with our government. It's the people running the government. That's the criminal. The structure is fine and the whole process is fine. They're not just being obedient to the law. They're being criminals. And so what we need to do is go after the individual. When you go after the individual, then you can chase them with U.S. codes. Now, there is in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 1 of the Bill of Rights, it's very clear that we shall not be disenfranchised. And we were disenfranchised. In U.S. Code 42, I think it's 1985 or 83, one or the other.
I believe it's 85. Yeah.
Okay, it goes through and talks about the process that when if anybody who is running for office and anybody interferes with that candidacy for office, okay, that it's a federal offense and they face a year or 2 years in jail and a $5,000 fine and so on and so forth. So the fact that we went and ran for office and these people, under the color of law, which now brings them into other U.S. codes under conspiracy, brings us into the criminal actions under conspiracy, and it also brings us into civil actions. So we can go after their house, their dog, their firstborn, their left, their right arm, or whatever. So we should go after the commissioners. Every commissioner that has went out there and changed our paperwork or denied us access or refuse to allow us, and especially the New York State commissioners on the state level, I think we need to file another lawsuit directly against those individuals under all those U.S. codes and attack them. And so that's something I'm thinking of doing in the next couple of weeks, possibly. But I don't want to overload myself. We do have another problem. We have a problem with losing our sheriffs here in the state of New York. This was brought up at a meeting up in Greene County. The sheriff was up there, and he gave his little speech. And two things he brought up, that number one, I think it's coming in under the SAFE Act. They're moving all of the control of the permits from the sheriff to the state troopers. Now, the head of the state troopers, Colonel, Cap, whatever they call, you know, the super head, already has made the statement, I heard, that he has no problems. If the government wants him to confiscate all guns in New York, he will do it. Okay, so that brings that down away from 62 sheriffs, or which in theory it should be, 62 elected sheriffs. It takes it away from 62 elected sheriffs who work for the people under the Constitution and moves it into a political process of a state trooper who works for the governor or some other individual, and we know where the governor's mind is at in this thing. And if he's given the order to take the guns away from the people, he's going to do it. The sheriff's already said they're not doing it. Okay. Now, there's a couple of things and a couple of problems, and we have to get this in the butt now. We can't wait until they make the move and pass it overnight and over a weekend, a holiday weekend, and give them 1 hour to read the bill or something again. We can't wait for that. We need to get ahead of the game here. We need to go out and sue now. There are 7 counties that don't have sheriffs, elected sheriffs. We need to go and make that happen. They need to have elected sheriffs. In the New York State Constitution, it clearly states that every county shall have an elected sheriff. They are violating the New York State Constitution. We need to get them in there. The other thing is that the U.S. Supreme Court has already ruled that the sheriff is the top cop, period. There's nobody higher than him in a county. So there better not be any state police think that they're going to come in and take guns away from people, because they're going to have to deal with the sheriff. And we got to make sure that the sheriff understands that he's got to be dealt with.
Right.
And he's got to be there for the people, okay? And again, therein is the relationship. We got to take the cop mentality out of the sheriff. I mentioned this earlier. We got to take the cop mentality out of the sheriff. And the cop mentality is there. They go, look, I know cops very well, okay? And they go into this mode, man. As soon as they feel that you're ruffling their feathers, they go into this mode, and they start to be inquisitive about you, and they start asking you questions, and they're interrogating you. As soon as you give them the least little resistance, they go in into an interrogation mode. And some of them can get pushy and even violent, okay? That has to be removed from our sheriffs. That whole mentality has got to go. That cop mentality. You know, when the FBI came to my house to interview me and go through all this process, you know, and they came in, I'll tell you what, these guys, I saw cops. I saw New York City cops in these guys. That's what they acted, just like the cops I know. And they played the game back and forth, and they were interrogating me and a little pushy, you know. It's a game they play, and they can't be doing this. You see, unless I've injured an individual, leave me alone. Get out of my face, and you don't have the right to question me about nothing. You know what? I'll question you if you're going to give me a gun, okay? And that's the attitude that people have got to have towards the sheriff. We need to treat them with as much respect as we're expecting them to treat us. But they better back off this interrogation attitude, because we're not here to be interrogated. They're not to be looking to see if we broke the law or something. It's none of their business. They need to deal with a real crime. Then
yeah,
they deal with it.
If they've got a complaint, they have to have a complaint.
Right, a real crime. Not all this legislature. Look at Judge Bork, and I don't know if everybody in this room knows who Judge Bork is. But Judge Bork is supposed to be one of the greatest constitutional minds of our times. That's what I heard, okay?
And
he was a judge that was chosen by Reagan for the Supreme Court, and the expression, you know, he got thrown out, they threw him out, and they balked him. And there was an expression that ran around for a while, you know, judges get balked. But this guy should have gotten in. But in any event, Judge Bork made a statement very clear, and he says 80% of the people in prison are there only because they opened their mouth. In other words, they went to the arraignment and made a plea. If they didn't make a plea, if they didn't go to the arraignment, if they challenged the jurisdiction, they would not be in jail. That's the point he was making. So 80% of the people that are in jail don't belong there, because they're there because they were suckered into it by fraud. So we got to get this whole system changed. And we got to turn the sheriff around on this. It's the sheriff's duty to make sure that warrants are in place and that there is a sworn statement signed and sealed under a notary, and a signature, a wet ink signature of a judge before they go serve a warrant on anyone. And no one could come into this state and serve a warrant without a sheriff, although I think the IRS somehow gets around all that, don't they?
Yeah, not only that, they should have to extradite us out of New York State territory, but they don't.
So, but anyway, that's what I think we have two cases we have to push on. I think the sheriff is first and foremost, and I think this other personal case towards anybody who was denied the ability to run as a candidate and was interfered with is a federal offense, and I think we need to put these people in jail. You know, and I'm not talking about put them in jail for a long period of time, and put them in jail for 7 days or 5 days. Let them know what it feels like to begin with. Let's make an example of them for the other commissioners and the other people involved in the Board of Election and other, you know, government agencies. Let's get an example out there, you know?
Yeah, somebody can be a hero. First one in. You know,
but no one else
we talked
want to
about
be that
this.
Hero either.
We talked about the gold and silver thing. I think that rectifies itself when you get when you win a case, and when you bicker on what the damages are. Once you get to that point, after you've got the damages cleaned out, then you say that you'll only accept gold or silver for that amount of money.
Absolutely. When we when we went in and we fined the judge for contempt of court, and we fined him one silver dollar. Our next fine was going to be 10 silver dollars. We never got to that second fine, did we, Gerard?
Did he pay up?
No, but we're gonna send the sheriff to collect once we reopen the court. Oh, we're definitely going to collect that silver dollar. And
okay.
When we get, that's what it is. The next, when we go back into the court, we're then going to fine him with 10 more silver dollars. So
He's
going to owe us 11 silver dollars, and we are going to send the sheriff down to collect it. Absolutely. Either he collects the 11 silver dollars, or he collects the judge. Go directly to jail, do not pass go. Whichever one the judge wants to do, that's up to him.
Yeah, cool.
And we'll tell the sheriff, look, if he doesn't have the silver dollars with him and he wants you to come back the next day so he can go out and get them, that's fine. We can look at that. So we're going to do it. We got to do it.
That's cool. Yep.
Hey, you know what? I'm really on board with the fact that we need the uniforms in the proper places. And ironically, I find myself up in Liberty, New York, at a town hall meeting. I mean, I'm here in Orange County. What am I doing up there? But for some reason, God works in very mysterious ways. I'm up there thinking I'm going to a tea party where it's really a town hall meeting, and there's a Sheriff Schiff, who is talking about how he is running for re-election, but the federal money, there's no federal monies coming in, and he needs the people's backing. So now it comes to full circle why I was actually up there, because if you send me tonight all the things that you require to know, I can literally go up to Sheriff Schiff and talk to him face-to-face, because after the meeting, I actually went up to him and I introduced myself, who I was, and I said to him, so you see what's going on with at the time, the gun control wasn't in the picture, but as far as DHS, and all the things that they were doing. And I said to him, how does this affect you people? And he says, well, I believe this is the reason why they're actually doing away with us, because they want their own personal armies in place, and they want to take out people's elected officials. So this is very interesting. So as soon as you get me all of this that you need as far as information, I can literally go talk to him face-to-face and get his help in so far as who funds him, who's trying to undermine the whole department, and so forth.
Well, that's about all the federal grants that they beg for, because every federal grant that the sheriff has to go for comes with strings attached, and those strings are the strings that have him give up his authority. When he takes that money, they always have a condition of him taking that money, and the condition is that he will sign off his authority in an emergency to the next highest official. And that's all part of that disaster NIMS training that they put you through when you get into a public job, whether it's on a town council or a policeman or whatever. Everybody takes the same courses, and then as you work your way up in administration, they have different courses that teach you how to act and how to do these things.
Something that Schiff is definitely going to be on board with. Being an oath keeper, because that was my thrust, that where are you as a law enforcement official going? In fact, I did bring up oath keepers, which he was not aware of. You know, wherever I go, the first thing out of my mouth is, when it's in the law enforcement arena, wherever I go, the first thing out of my mouth is, have you heard of the oath keepers? Because without the backing of the uniforms to turn the guns in the opposite direction away from the people and onto the politicians, we don't have a prayer in hell. It's that simple. So I think Schiff is going to be definitely very helpful, and I definitely got the feeling at that time that he's going to be on board. The other thing I wanted to address is that I got the shock of my life when I had a complainant and I had an arrestee, and this came back to about 89, and the sergeant on the desk said to me, did you do a background check on the complainant? And I go, no. For what? You know, he didn't do anything.
That's amazing that they would do that.
What's that?
That's amazing that they would do that. Everybody's a suspect. They got to stop this mentality.
They started it back then because I was in administrative prior to that. So I would do background checks for detectives. And never have I ever did a background check on a complainant. Because at the time, we had those funky computers that only a few people could work. I was one of them. So I always did background checks, pull-up plates, the whole nine yards. And back in the 70s and the early 80s, we never did that. So when in the mid-80s, the PD started doing that, even I was surprised, because as far as I'm concerned, if you're the complainant, the fact that you actually were, say, a prostitute or a convicted robber, you did your time. What's that got to do with somebody punching you in the head and now you're a victim of assault? You know what I'm saying? It didn't make any sense to me. But mm-hmm. It was a requirement of NYPD that you do both. You know, it was just a requirement. And now that we're 20 years down the line, we can see why. Because we cops were being conditioned against the people. They put that us and them mentality in us. And
well, not only that, but let's say you had a case against somebody in government or somebody that they liked. If they could do a background check on a complainant and it comes up that he had this, that in history, they will use that in the news media to discredit him so that he can never get an unbiased jury. They'll use that to run that case the way they want to. And so that's why they want to check everybody, because they don't want to leave any resources off the table for them.
Basically,
you know, and they can use it or
now,
they can not.
We were being conditioned to be tin soldiers for the system. We weren't public servants to serve the public needs. That's the way I look at it now. In fact, I call them tin soldiers for the for the Kent State.
They would like to control the complainant as much as they control the defendant. You see,
you know what? As far as the complainants go, they are fishing. They're fishing for situations. But like I said, as far as I'm concerned, even if you're a convicted felon and you serve your time, that should not enter into the fact that you just got the shit beat out of you, and you're a victim of assault. How does that two connect? Well, the only way you can actually figure that they were conditioning you to think in those us and them terms and conditioning you to be a tin soldier for the politicians. In other words, everybody in your eyes is supposed to be a felon, a criminal, or so forth, must be checked out. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, we had a case in a
their
local
method
court
of control.
Yeah, exactly.
In a local court.
Exactly.
Where they did what
it was
they
a very
us
subliminal message that every civilian is subject to scrutiny as a felon, which to me, like I said, is a conditioning to make you a tin soldier for the politician. Because
I want to end this recording. We'll continue the conversation.
Oh, you
should have
ended it an hour. I thought you were going to end it an hour ago. I thought you turned it off already.
Yeah, well, we got lost. No, I didn't. So let me end it, and then we'll continue. So hang on one minute.